All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Wednesday, February 14th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to get you started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. Go to the site DFSR.com/fantasy, and it'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You're all good to go. Get you started there, free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month, and you're all set. Buddy, happy Valentine's Day. This is our second time recording, so our organic witty banter that I had going for the Valentine's Day thing is not as going to be as good this time, I don't think. But
well, do you want to still talk about, just mention how you're taking me out for Valentine's Day tonight?
You're funny. My daughter,
we're not going to die for this one. No, we don't.
You said you got reminded this morning that it was Valentine's Day, and my daughter, I kind of like on the periphery remember that it was Valentine's Day, and then my daughter jumped in this morning and said, "It's Valentine's Day." I said, "Sure is. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody."
Isn't your daughter like a month old?
Oh, my other daughter, the older one.
Oh, okay. I was like, Jesus Christ.
But then the one month old did confirm. She said, yep. Like, she knew. Like, she can't form the full idea. Like, she can't read the calendar. But she
can throw up gang signs, though. That's the one thing. That's like a crazy little talent she has. She can do all of them. It's really nuts.
Also, this is apropos of nothing else but basketball, but I had a dream I was in the Rockets last night, but then got cut because my daughter had to do something and I couldn't make the game. And so they filled my position with somebody else because I had a tape or something.
Do you think it's because you're too short, too slow, too old?
I was on the team. Okay. I was on the team, and then I had to take her somewhere, and I lost my spot to somebody else, and it was a huge bummer. All right, it's like a rec league soccer kind of thing. We are going to break down a big, huge NBA Wednesday here. There's, as we lead into the All-Star break, because there's going to be around a week off for the All-Star break, and we will not be doing podcasts, obviously, during that time. Going to throw up some content over this weekend, and then early next week with some just basic like mid-season awardsy kind of stuff. Started going through some games and just some, you know, top performances kind of stuff, worst performances of the season, just like some weird stat line. So we'll throw those up over the course of the weekend and early next week as people Jones hardcore for no NBA, because if you play NBA a lot, and this week does end up being sort of like a very big dead time where people start throwing, like, I think I'll start NHL, I think I'll start doing PGA or NASCAR, all this other stuff. Definitely a little neck itch. But anyway, so as we lead into the All-Star break, 12 games today, 2 tomorrow, and then obviously off until next Thursday. But 12 games today, kind of a lot to break down here. We will go game by game, and then try to just suss out some of the injury news and notes, of which there are a decent amount. Some teams on back-to-backs also, so we'll have to kind of wade through how problematic we think that's going to be. The first game is 7 o'clock. Miami goes in and plays Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a -7.5 favorite. Miami, they don't have any injury news, but man, this team is quickly entering the simply can't be trusted realm. They probably are already there, by the way. I'm more in tune to it when I actually play guys from the team than of like I'm just going into full avoid. So last night it was Tyler Johnson who was coming very. We talked about him on the podcast. Was coming very cheap on FanDuel, not as cheap on DraftKings, but still kind of a play. And then he just went out and played. He started and just went and played like 22 minutes. And they played Wayne Ellington a ton off the bench. And James Johnson, of course, saw like 30 minutes. And Dragic barely played. Well, it's so funny because usually you see this kind of minute stuff with the starters on teams that like run their entire bench, like the Nets or the Kings, right? But the Miami actually plays like really tight rotations, except you can't figure out where the 8 or 9 guys that are going to play, what their minutes are going to be. So it's like, it's not... You know what I mean? Like the bad teams will just be like, all right, we're playing all 13 guys tonight, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. Everyone gets minutes. The Miami doesn't roll that way, except that you're trying to figure out which of their 8 guys are actually going to play on a given night. That's the most maddening thing. I'm very confused about what to do with the Miami situation here, even on like setting baseline minutes for guys. And I don't know, do we just trend them all really low? Like Tyler Johnson, when he starts, typically plays 33 minutes, let's say, right?
Well, I think him losing minutes in the absence of context means he just can't be a cash game play on these prices. I mean, the crazy thing, too, is in just 22 minutes, like the floor wasn't outrageously bad, hitting like 4.2x. That's still bad. That's not what you're looking for, obviously. But, you know, that's kind of why he was worth taking a risk. But now you know that the floor is that low and it probably is a little bit more difficult to justify rolling another.
Yeah, and that's the problem with these Miami guys is that you said the floor isn't that bad. On a permanent basis, all these guys are good and they're all priced pretty reasonably, except that the price reasonably because you just can't trust the minutes on a day-to-day basis. So I, you know, still no Olynyk. You think that's going to open up minutes for Bam or for Johnson, and sometimes it does, except when it doesn't. So I think that's where, I think we're just a level of trust, a degree too low, or probably a couple of degrees too low with just the Miami rotations. On the Philly side, they're coming in fully healthy. You know, the Miami matchup here is not that great. Philly's, you know, projected to put up some points over 100 and something, but I'm just not sure on a huge slate if we want to be in one of the slower matchups. And I'm talking about mostly for guys like Embiid and Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, I think on a big slate like this, it's sometimes reasonable to target a slower matchup for big tournaments. But that's only really when the game is projected to be somewhat close. And Philly being favored by 7.5 here, that makes me want to steer away from that. It's like a lot would have to go right for this to be the game you need to target to win the big tournaments tonight. And given that we all have limited funds, I don't think this will be the game for me.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I just think that, you know, if you want to get separation, I do think there will be low ownership on this game. And I just don't think that this is where I'm going to end up. Next game on the slate, Atlanta goes in and plays Detroit. Detroit 8.5 favorites here. We have something of a reasonable expectation about what the teams are going to do because they just played each other the other day. They just played on Sunday. Right. And with the Hawks somehow pulling out a victory over the Pistons by 3. Drummond, the guy I really want to focus on the most here is Drummond, because he has been pretty ridiculous since Drummond and Blake together. He's been pretty ridiculous since they brought Blake over in the trade. I mean, the rebounding numbers were already great, and they've just basically sustained over that time. He went 25 and 15 in that game. The price is way up. But Atlanta, we've seen over the course of the season, is a pretty good matchup. Even when they are starting Deadman now at center. I mean, what do we want to do with this Detroit team against an Atlanta team that we'd like to target guys against Atlanta because their defense has been pretty damn bad on the course of the season? Well, where do you stand on the big two here in Griffin and Drummond?
Yeah, I mean, so in the case of Drummond, he's expensive for sure, but the price has actually come down off the peak. And, you know, it's unclear to me exactly why. I guess it was a somewhat lackluster game against New Orleans, but you know, nothing terrible or anything. I think at 10-6 rather than the 11-2 we were having to flirt with last time he played Atlanta, it seems like a very good value to me. I think he's cash game viable. I mean, I think he's shown in the Clippers and the New Orleans games that he's capable of not fully paying this off because, you know, we've talked about a lot of guys who are scoring dependent. Drummond's value is locked into how many putbacks and how many lobs he can get. Basically, he's not really a huge offensive creator, so he can go out there, even in the game against New Orleans, 21 rebounds with just 13 points. And that makes it a little bit tough to sustain your price when you have 12 and 13 point nights with any regularity. So, yeah, definitely playable tonight. I would be willing to play him in cash games. We kind of saw, to your point, about what he did against Atlanta. So it seems like a favorable matchup. And I think he's definitely a guy worth considering. As for Blake, I still am not persuaded that he is a $9,000 player on this Pistons team. I don't think we have a lot of evidence of that yet. We have one game where he paid this price, and then every game since then, that was his first game. The six games since then, you haven't been happy with his performance a single time on $9,000. So, I think he's looking like a good fit there, but in a team that, you know, spreads the ball out a little bit more, has a ball-dominant point guard like Ish Smith, it just might not be as quite a good a fit for him for fantasy production as we saw in LA.
Yeah, Ish has seen his minutes drop off. I don't think it matters. I mean, they played Jameer Nelson a little bit more.
Nelson's a dribbler too.
One thing with Drummond is that while the rebounds have been able to sustain, his assist numbers have actually gone down since Blake has gotten there.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
And he was one of the best assist centers in the NBA. He might have just led the team in assists. No, that's not true. I'm thinking somebody else. But regardless, he was averaging right around 3.5-4 assists per game, and it's really more in the 2 range with Blake there. So it doesn't sound like much, but losing, you know, 3.5 points, something like that per game over the course of this kind of stretch, it kind of does matter, especially when the rebounds and the rebounds and the scoring isn't going to be there. I still like them both. I think I'm not comparing them apples to apples because they're different prices. I still am fine here with playing Drummond, I think, with the idea that, you know, he's not just locked in for 60 points like it sort of looked like he was in the short term. On the Atlanta side, they're huge underdogs, obviously, despite the win, just because they're still Atlanta and they're still fielding the same team. Deadman is still starting. He did start last night. He's 5,500, so that price actually came down a couple hundred bucks on – oh, no, excuse me, that's on DraftKings. It went up a little bit on DraftKings, and then on FanDuel, he's right around the same price. Yeah, 5,700. He was right around value last night in the matchup against the Bucks.
Sure.
Seems like he's going to see the minutes again because he's just going to start. And we, again, he played 31 minutes against them in his first start. Do we trust running him out in like sort of like this mid-tier where you sometimes need to find value to sort of round out a lineup?
Yeah, I think Dedmon is just too cheap right now. I don't think it's a great matchup with Detroit, but given that we have one game sample size of him going 20 and 13 against them, chipping in four defensive stats as well, and following that up with a solid, if not incredible, performance against Milwaukee is pretty encouraging. You don't like to see 4 minute fluctuations around these kind of fantasy point per minute sort of beasts. Like that kind of thing can go ahead and cost you 5-6 fantasy points for him when things aren't breaking correctly. So that is a little bit troublesome. And again, on a million game slate, is he the guy you want for your cash games? I'm not totally sure, but I still think he's too cheap. And I think when you have a price opportunity mismatch like that, it's at least worth considering.
It's always encouraging too, when just a good, like Dedmon's good. So when a good player moves into the starting lineup, it's not like you're getting, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example, like Joffrey LaVarnway, let's say, like he plays a ton of minutes last night.
And
he's just like, I don't know, there's guys that can show up and do fantasy stuff from time to time. And then there's guys who are actually like, you know, good and probably valuable assets. And Dedmon probably strikes me as that kind of guy. So it's good when a good player joins the starting lineup. He's just still relegated to being on the Hawks. The rest of these Hawks guys, the same old sort of story. Schroeder, you're going to struggle to see more than 32 minutes from him on a day-to-day basis. Bazemore, you're kind of hoping that he just plays 30 minutes and doesn't run terrible from the field because he's a very streaky shooter. And then the other guys like Prince and Ilyasova, you're just kind of wishing and hoping that this is the night they play 30 minutes and not 22. So that's really what you're looking at with the Hawks. It's very difficult. We're still, you know, you and I were looking at a website that we came upon. It's called Tankapalooza, or tankathon.com. It's worth checking out because I was calling it Tankapalooza to somebody else the other day. Tankathon.com is where you can look at the odds for every team because there's two races in the NBA. There's the race to the championship, and then there's the seemingly more important race they put just as much stock into, which is to get the first pick in the draft. So go check it out. Atlanta firmly in the race to get that first pick. So Tankathon.com is where it's worth looking to see if the team that you're thinking about rostering tonight is trying to lose on purpose. All right, Charlotte goes in and plays Orlando. Charlotte, a 5.5-point favorite here against an Orlando team that just can't get anybody healthy. You know, they trade Vucevic has been, he'll probably be back after the All-Star break. Gordon, it feels like every year we get the, it's actually typically Aaron Gordon, I'm realizing, is that we get the Aaron Gordon is questionable and then he just sits out a month. Like when it's all said and done, and the dust settles, you realize, okay, Aaron Gordon's been questionable for a month, but he also just like hasn't played for a month. So like what's happening? Why wasn't he doubtful, or why wasn't he just out? I feel like
the emotional roller coaster being Aaron Gordon as well. Like you're sitting there at 9 a.m. Someone's like, Aaron, it's a game time decision tonight, buddy. He's like, okay, coach. He's in the hot tub. He's got the ice bath. He's getting the massage. Gets there. He's going through warm-ups. And they're like, not tonight, my friend.
Damn it. So,
yeah, exactly. Like, shoot.
Well, it's just crazy. I guess some teams are just worse at this than others, or they're worse at diagnosing injuries, or they're just not reporting it the same way. I think they care. I think they just have a different relationship with like the public than certain other teams. Anyway, Orlando has.
My point is that I don't think they care to report. I think they're like, whatever, game time decision. Like, who does this matter for? You know?
Yeah, we were Orlando, dude. We stink. So even without Boots and without Gordon and now without Elfrid Payton, you would think it would kind of matter, and it kind of doesn't matter. I don't like the same thing we've seen with bad teams is, you know, they get Fournier 33 minutes sometimes and sometimes not, and Simmons 33 minutes sometimes and sometimes not. The point guard situation is anything but clear. Thought it was going to be Augustine, and then now it's not because Shelvin Mack. Like, is Orlando just now another team also that you kind of just can't give anyone more than 30 minutes in any, you can target them in tournaments and hope that maybe this is the night they get to 35, but you have to just live with the expectation that it's going to be kind of 29 or 30 minutes for all these guys. And that's just kind of what you're getting.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jonathan Simmons, the plan is probably to play him a little bit more. Not that he's particularly spectacular typically when he does get those minutes, but yeah, I mean, Orlando has been this way for the better part of since we started this business. So this isn't like a new thing for them. But they did have a little retreat into normal minutes for a little while, like when Vooch and Aaron Gordon were both healthy and the team looked like maybe they could do something occasionally. Now that that's not the case, most of these guys are just overpriced. They're all priced like you know, when the team was actually trying, and they're like Fournier, Simmons, when these guys were playing 35 to 38 minutes a game, and that hasn't changed, but the prices haven't come down, so you can't play these guys.
Yeah, they're tied for one of the many teams tied for worst records in the league. Charlotte, obviously, Orlando's a bad defense. We can, you know, we can target players against them. They, it seems like their minutes are, at least their safer minutes, and safe is in quotes, are targeted around Kemba, Batum, and Howard, with some rotational stuff with the small forward and power position between MKG and Williams. Kemba is not a guy I feel like I've talked about or rostered all that much this season. I don't know if it's just because he's always been overpriced or he's so scoring dependent that the performance fluctuates. What are your thoughts here on Kemba in a very good matchup? Because this Orlando team is not a good backcourt defense.
Yeah, well, you know, the Hornets are another team that's just played so many odd game scripts recently. If you look at three of the last four have been very crazy in terms of minutes for their starters. The Portland game that was close, so they lost by six. Walker played 39 minutes. Then the Denver game was crazy. Then they played Phoenix in a close game. He played 35. They played Indiana. He played 40 minutes. So, you know, Walker, I think the plan on any given night is to play him like 38 to 40 minutes a game if the game stays close and if the shot's falling and so forth. But the upside for him appears to be around 5x points per dollar, and he can get there. You know, he can, like, he had a huge game against Portland. He had big games against Indiana and Atlanta earlier this month, but a big game for him doesn't seem to be commensurate with the occasional 30 point game you're going to get out of him, or not so occasional. Great matchup with Phoenix, played 34 minutes, scored 29 fantasy points. So even though this is a really good matchup, I think it sounds like a big tournament play only. And Batum kind of falls in the same category for a guy that can occasionally actually go off. Like, you can get 7x points per dollar. It's all scoring dependent. Or, like, you know, when that odd stretch where he had back-to-back games averaging 10 rebounds and then promptly went right back down to the exactly four that he has all the other time. So, yeah, and outside of those guys, it's another crazy minute situation. So, unfortunately, I don't see a lot that I'm going to be keying in on here for cash.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I was, while you were talking, I was trying to do the real quick lookup about what the difference is in average, the fantasy points per scoring per minute, but I didn't get that up in time while you're talking, and I simply don't want to pause.
So what do you think about all the really smart things I said? Because I'm sure you were listening to every word I said while you were doing that.
I'm sure it was great, but I'll listen to it when I go to edit the podcast. And when I always hear everything you say on the edit when I'm trying to figure out if this is something I should take out or not, if we should just leave it in. No, I think I'm with you on those guys. It's just you want to trust them, and my strong guess is that when we look at Walker, what he needs to have happen for him fantasy wise, he just needs to score. And this is just not where you want to be. It's where you want to be from a tournament perspective, but it's just not where you want to be from cash game, because if the shot's not falling or whatever happens, you're completely sunk. Indiana goes in and plays Brooklyn. Indiana 4.5 point favorites here. The you know, a guy that actually does seem to kind of do a little bit of everything and is coming off a monster game is Victor Oladipo. So Oladipo has gone through stretches where he's looked like just the best, one of the best fantasy players in all of basketball. So he's against Boston, he played 37 minutes, put up 29 shots with a 35 and 10 line. And then against the Knicks on Sunday, went 39 and 8 for the performance, and with six steals and a block. So if you're on FanDuel, that's, you completely win the day with those fans.
That's a lot.
That's, what do we do? Oladipo, I'm most encouraged though with him by the minutes, 37, 34, 37, 39 minutes. This is entering elite territory when it comes to just on court time. And no other stat in basketball matters more than minutes. I know people are going to, we're going to guffaw kind of thing, something like that, but it's just simply true. You just need the minutes. And then at that point, you know, you need your per minute production.
We need both. And you can't be a star who plays 32 minutes generally and sustain a $10,000 price tag.
No, like there's Joel Embiid, who's like getting, he's like the one guy that kind of keeps it close.
It's still hard,
right? It's still tough. And there's more ways it goes wrong than goes right. But is Oladipo a guy we want to put in that, like that pushing up toward that Jimmy Butler, Anthony Davis, sort of pushing toward 40 minutes on a night guy, like 38 minutes? Like, would we feel comfortable setting him at that? Because if we are, then he is actually getting close to being able to sustain a $10,000 price tag. What are your thoughts here on Oladipo?
Well, there's a lot to unpack. So I think it comes down to wanting to consider two different things. The first is, are the minutes legit? And then second of all, are the fantasy points per minute performance recently legit? I think the minutes thing, I think, you know, is anybody's guess. Like, I think we can actually try to figure that out and figure out, you know, he's been a 34.5 minute per game guy so far this season. If that does come up to 38, there's obviously quite a bit of increased opportunity there. But on the season, he's averaging just 1.2 fantasy points per minute, which is excellent, by the way. I don't want to say adjust to the disparage a guy or anything, but 1.2 fantasy points per minute on a 4,000, like on 40 minutes, say, would be 48 fantasy points. And that's good. That's okay, but not on a 10-2 salary. And that's if he gets 40, if he gets the full 40 minutes. If he gets 38, obviously that comes down. And you're not talking about a guy who should routinely pay a 10-2 price tag outside of excellent matchups. Brooklyn is one of those excellent matchups, so I think he is playable tonight. But I want to temper people's enthusiasm a little bit here, because I think a lot of people overrate a clustering effect of a few good games in a row. And it's very easy to forget, you know, the Memphis game, the Charlotte game, the Orlando game, the Cleveland game, all from in the last couple of weeks, San Antonio, where he played all his minutes, 34 plus minutes in each of those games. And the most fantasy points he scored in any of those games was 39, right? So did something happen on Groundhog's Day on February 2nd where he went out there and said, by golly, right now I'm going to turn into an 8-rebound a game guy and I'm going to chip in 5 defensive stats per game? Like, I don't personally think so. I think it's probably just a clustering effect of his good games. But again, against Brooklyn, and on a night where a lot of people are going to be very enthusiastic, I think you can absolutely play him. But I think if we hit another big one, you know, say we get 50 fantasy points, 55 fantasy points, at that point, I'm going to scale back my Oladipo interest pretty considerably, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. The matchup is great here. Brooklyn still does play very fast. They're slightly better on defense than they were in the past, but still not good. The rest of the Pacers, you know, at times we've had some Thad Young interests, at times some Bojan Bogdanovic. Miles Turner's a guy that we would love to play, I think, if we just knew he was going to play mid-30s minutes, and that just hasn't really been the case. A little bit of foul trouble last game. And then Corey Joseph, he's getting the start for Darren Collison, and that completely doesn't matter. This guy is a fantasy points per minute complete dog anyway. And then like he had 21 minutes last game, took 3 shots, and then Joe Young just came in and played 31 minutes off the bench. I don't know if we end up seeing a starting lineup switch where they just move Joseph out of the mix here, because they are just kind of playing Young a lot. I'm not sure. Joseph also had 5 fouls last game. I don't know. The good thing about Joseph is he's just not very good. And so even at a pretty cheap salary, you don't typically have to worry about him. Brooklyn side, this doesn't really happen to me too much, but I got fooled. I don't know. Let me ask you a question. Did I get fooled here? D'Angelo Russell played 32 minutes in the overtime game against New Orleans. And he had been on something of a minutes limit, and then that minutes limit went right out the door. And a lot of those minutes came in regulation. Like, he really didn't play in overtime.
Right.
And then, so I felt like, oh, okay, there, the minutes limit's off. I think we can safely take him to like 28, 29 minutes, which at his prices, he's a very good fantasy player when he's playing that many minutes, at only 6,000. And then he just went right back to playing like 24, 25 minutes last game. Like, I don't know. Is it just the Nets thing? And I fell into the old Nets trap that I feel like I've fallen into time immemorial.
He wasn't like, starting, right? Russell?
He was not starting, so we're
playing backups on the Nets now, Doug?
The thing with him is there's backups and there's backups, right? Like, there's backups that are just the guys we don't want to consider. And then there's backups that are like Lou Williams, right? That are not really a backup. And when the 31 minutes that we saw out of him for New Orleans in regulation pointed to me toward they're moving him out of this role. Because remember, this is a guy they brought over in a pretty big move over the summer to kind of be a cornerstone-ish piece to their franchise. And he's just been dealing with injuries has been mostly his problem. But do you think that because it's the Nets, I think I had him like 28 minutes. Do you think I was foolish and naive to go that way with Russell after that game against New Orleans?
Foolish and naive might be an overstatement, but yeah, I think it's a little bit aggressive. I think whenever you're talking about backups in general, even like Lou Williams, we talk about how it's so much easier to lose minutes than it is to get more minutes. And on the Nets, where everything is just crazy every single night, that's not a team where I would want to be speculating.
Yeah, like I said, it was like it wasn't all the way to 31. It was like 27 or 28. And he's at $6,000. He's very good points per minute. Like, he's a dynamic scorer. So that was really my issue. I think if you knew, like, on the day that he enters the starting lineup, let's say that's today. I don't think it's going to be, but on the day that he does enter the starting lineup, I think we can comfortably go to 30 minutes. And yeah, you are going to get a value with him at 6,000. Like, especially in this matchup, because Indiana is a bad defense. So the rest of the Nets guys, again, the same old story. Sometimes there are a couple guys, actually, the Crab and I was gonna say Crab and Goyle from my Harry Potter days. Crab and Carol are Carol. is pretty consistent in the low 30s minutes. Like, he's one of the few guys I think you can say, if you gave him 32 minutes and kind of feel like he was going to get out there and play them, especially without LeVert and without Ronnie Hollis Jefferson, because he just is, he's so versatile. So other than that, though, Brooklyn, actually one other guy I want to ask you a question about is Spencer Dinwiddie. Spencer Dinwiddie was had huge ownership in DraftKings cash games the other day, which kind of like shocked me. I don't know if they thought, because like Russell was going to rest on the back of, off the big minutes game. But he's played 36-43, but that was a double overtime, and then 36 minutes. Is he a guy that we can begin to sort of trust and put in like the 33 minute zone, or are we going to head back to his days like when they played Milwaukee and Houston, when he played 29 and 25 minutes? Like, what do we do with a guy like Dinwiddie? Because he's another guy that he's fantasy he's per minute viable, and he's still on the Nets.
Yeah, he's also 7,700, and I think with Russell, it's hard to say Russell's, you know, nipping at his heels, given that Dinwiddie played 42 minutes in that New Orleans game, and he was quite excellent in that game. Which, again, you're paying a lot for some Nets right now, and I do have to think that in the long run, those guys are sort of competing to do the same role. Now, I don't know. The Nets don't seem to think so. Dinwiddie's assist numbers have been excellent in February, averaging more than 10 assists per game. So, you know, maybe he can, right, it's exactly 10 assists per game. So maybe he can continue to sustain these numbers, in which case he would be a value. But I think, again, whenever you're buying someone at their all-time high price, which we are with Dinwiddie, you have to ask yourself, why am I doing that? Do I think there's continued room for growth? Do I think that this person has moved into a much more secure situation? Do I think that the minutes have now hit a stabilization point where on a night-to-night basis, I can rely on this guy to kind of produce at a level that used to be his peak? And I don't think I can answer in the affirmative on any of those things with Dinwiddie. I think, again, we're getting a nice group of games for a guy who's, you know, fantasy points per minute production is sort of known at this point.
I do think the overall goal possibly with them is to play Dinwiddie and Russell together. They have done it at times, which would just cut into both of their productions. Washington goes in and plays the Knicks. We've got an interesting situation here with the Wizards, because Thomas Satoransky took a really, really bad fall at the end of their last game. Actually, I can't remember who they played, but he got fouled going up for a dunk, and then kind of like landed on his head and is in concussion protocol. And I don't believe he's cleared it. And also Tim Frazier is also questionable. And that's kind of the end of their ball handlers, I think. Like, they were already completely short without John Wall. Right. And they were sort of splitting time. Satoransky was playing more than Frazier, and he was actually been excellent last game. Oh, it was against OKC. He had been excellent last game. And I mean, what do we do with this situation? I'd be shocked if Satoransky played after the way he fell last game and with the concussion thing, just and going into the All-Star break. Like, why go crazy with this? But let's say him and Frazier both sat. Like, what would we even do? And then also we have Marquise Morris, who's been sick and didn't practice on Monday. I know I'm going long-winded here, but you know, leading into the All-Star break has its own considerations, because you have basically just need to survive one more day to have a huge run of rest, or you could say, just play this game because you have a huge run of rest like after this, right? What do you think? Let's say we're completely devoid of point guards here. What are we going to do with the Washington situation? Or even if just one of them misses, where do we stand here with them and Beal and Morris? I don't know. This feels like a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, we saw Jody Meeks play increased minutes. He wasn't very good on a fantasy points per minute basis. You know, Beal's minutes should be pretty secure, but he was really bad last game. And, you know, no help to us because we played him on every site for that game. But outside of that, they really don't have any strong ball handlers. So I think it kind of winds up falling to Beal just as a matter of course. And that's not necessarily a position I'm sure he's totally comfortable in. And I think that throws a monkey wrench into Washington's plans in a pretty significant way, even in a pretty good matchup here with New York.
Yeah, and it's a weird one because New York is in complete and full tank mode. They sat Courtney Lee last game and started Lance Thomas, and they didn't report this isn't a tank thing, but they didn't really report the Beasley and O'Quinn who was starting correctly. It's an excellent matchup. Washington's still favored to put up points. This is one of the ones I think we'll know. These injuries all fall into the we'll know in plenty of time. Like illnesses, you tend to know, and then concussions, you definitely know well ahead of time. So I think well before lock, we'll have a clear idea of if we're going to play Kelly Oubre again, because Oubre is an excellent play. If Morris is out, Mike Scott off the bench. There's a lot of moving parts here. This is why you're going to want, we'll cover all this on our projections and in our chat room, members only chat room. So if this is the perfect kind of situation to just kind of head over to the site prior to lock to get that all sorted out. The Knicks, like I said, they did start Lance Thomas over Courtney Lee last game. Michael Beasley still played a ton of, played 39 minutes against Philly the other night. Is he at 30, if he's going to be like in the mid 30s minutes, even for a team that's losing, like wants to lose, are we comfortable running Beasley out there? Like, I don't know. Like, he's a fantasy point per minute. He's kind of awesome. He's also 6,800 right now at a small forward position that, you know, can be thin at times. Where do we stand with Beasley?
Yeah, I think he'll be solid on these price points. I think, yeah, on a fantasy point per minute basis, you know, I was talking about, some skepticism around Oladipo's numbers being able to produce going forward. Beasley, I don't share any of that skepticism on these price points. Like, I think if he's going to play 30 to 35 minutes, heaven forbid, touch up to 39 minutes, I think he's an excellent value at 6,800. He's interesting because while he'll make the team worse by being out there probably just chucking and just taking every single shot, is totally fine from a DFS perspective. So yeah, I'd be happy to play Beasley here. You know, Washington looking really rough without Wall, without any of those backup point guards. Yeah, the, you know, Vegas doesn't see this as the closest game in the world necessarily, but 4.5 is not anything, like on paper it shouldn't be seen, or like on paper I think you see a 32 and 24 team against a 23 and 35 team and you think that it's not going to be the closest game in the world, but the 4.5 point spread suggests otherwise. So yeah, I like Beasley here, totally fine.
What about our old friend Tim Hardaway Jr.? Tim Hardaway Jr. is 10 for his last 60 from three.
Sure.
Which is 11%. Not good. He's down to 5,500.
Buying opportunity.
Well, let me ask you a question. Is it a buying opportunity? 10 for, I mean, this is about as bad of a run for a shooter that you'll see ever, right? I just can't. It's probably not historically bad, but it's got to be cresting toward it because shooting this, making this few shots is on this kind of volume over the short term is insanely bad. We have him right now as the best points per dollar shooting guard on FanDuel at 33 minutes. Is that, if he showed up in cash games and you were on the system tonight, would you do it? I mean, could you stomach it? Could you not? Like, could you shoot the upside because you're buying maybe incredibly low on a guy who's very streaky? What are your thoughts here on Hardaway?
Well, it's a combination of both. I think you are buying very low. I think the true price for him should be more like 6,000. That's a very significant discount. You know, nothing to turn your nose up at, a $500 discount on a $6,000 price tag. The issue is the minutes, though. You know, when you're performing this way, coaches don't tend to have as steady a hand as they should when it comes to shooting slumps. And so you've seen Hardaway's minutes kind of get jerked up and down. Knowing that that's part of the equation for him, and knowing that he was banged up, that there was some injury stuff, I think there's enough uncertainty here that you can just bet the downside and know that, like, you know, missing out on being on Tim Hardaway Island tonight isn't the reason you're going to miss out on your cash game. So yeah, I don't want to play him for cash tonight.
Yeah, excellent GBP play, probably the GBP play.
I love him for GBP.
I would say just be, not the. I mean, there's lots of guys you can play, but he strikes me as a guy. Yeah, like he's exactly, because he still a volume shooter. He still chucks from the rafters. So on the nights the shot goes down, he's firmly in play. Before we get to these 8 o'clock games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about NoHalftime.com. NoHalftime's a great place to go on a big night like tonight. If it feels too complicated, you don't want to be there the whole hour before lock. You just pick one player and then you pick somebody you think your guy's going to outperform. And that's pretty much it. You choose a dollar amount, issue your challenge to the world, and then you go from there. So you can download the No Halftime app, use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first ever deposit. You can check out a bunch of challenges that other people have issued. Great app. Go check them out.
Next game, 8 o'clock game, we have Toronto goes in and plays Chicago. Toronto 6.5 point favorite. Chicago been kind of feisty in the short term since they've gotten Levine back. They're not a good team by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't know. At least they're at least able to stay in games. Toronto, tough to get a read on them. They play a deep bench. Their bench is excellent. It's one of the reasons their record is so good. And after Lowry and DeRozan, I'm just not sure how safe we want to call any of these guys. And yeah, I'm not even sure Lowry and DeRozan are a lot safe, because when your bench is this good, the bench can just get left out there for longer periods of time just because they're playing well. And why not? Like if you have a game firmly in hand, that's kind of my general feeling about Toronto at this point. I don't know if you have a different if you just have like a different way to look at them. From a DFS standpoint, I'm not all that excited about them.
No, I'm not going to touch Toronto in a matchup where they're so heavily favored, you know, just against a terrible, terrible Chicago team that has every reason in the world to lose. We've seen plenty of minutes volatility out of even their big name guys. You do see, if you want to go through game logs, you'll see occasional excellent performances, and then you'll see some ones where they completely kill you and make you come in last place in your cash games. And that's just not where I'm going to be on a 12 game slate.
Yep. Chicago getting Chris Dunn back after an extended absence because of the concussion. I don't think he's going to factor into their plan all that much tonight, just because it's been a while since he played. I doubt he starts. I'd be shocked if he played more than 10 or 15 minutes. Although I am wondering, Jerian Grant is a guy at point guard who has played a ton over the short term. And then I'm just not sure if this matchup means Toronto's a very bad matchup. And with the threat of Dunn coming back, Grant has had really heavy ownership on both sites over the last, I don't know, three or so games at 37. He's played 37, 36, and 30. He's played 36 or more minutes actually in the last five games. Do you think we finally just kind of jump off the Grant train here with Dunn coming back and the matchup, or still have a chance to sort of buy?
No, we're going to get off the Grant train here. With Chris Dunn coming back, you know, this is already going to be a questionable spot for Jerian Grant, I think. I mean, the minutes have been relatively secure for him, but the performance hasn't necessarily been that secure. He's been excellent in the last three games, but prior to that, he had several games where he just didn't produce on this price. And Chris Dunn's reemergence, chipping in even just 5 minutes of his away, would be very troubling for his fantasy prospects in a really slow and bad matchup with Toronto. So, no, not complaining.
OKC and Memphis plays. There's no line in the game right now. I'm not sure if they're maybe waiting on the back-to-back because OKC did play last night. Russ and Carmelo both came back and played against Cleveland, and they took the L to the Cavaliers. But with no line in the game, I think that's mostly just waiting to hear if they want to rest any of those guys because they had just come back from a two-game absence with various injuries. So I think we'll have to wait on that. It probably doesn't matter for us all that much because Memphis, while still bad, still represents a very slow matchup. So on a huge slate, I doubt that we see much in the way of ownership for either of those two guys. And then Memphis, what a mess. Even when they have guys like Seldon sit, and they had Tyreek Evans on the trade blocks. They didn't play him forever, and they brought him back last game, and he just kind of plays low 20s minutes. Andrew Harrison played 11 or 12 minutes because this guy was an absolute complete foul box last game, and I only know because we had rostered him on DraftKings, but he just couldn't. He would step into the game and just foul and then walk back to the bench. Like, and his 12 or 11 or 12 minutes was strictly just because he couldn't stay, could not stay on the court.
So we're not going to play these guys in a terrible matchup with OKC. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, well, no, there's a couple of interesting guys. Like, your thoughts on like Jermichael Green is still seeing 30 minutes around that level, I would say. He's only 4,600 on FanDuel. And then I am wondering about because they're without Seldon, a guy like possibly Mario Chalmers, or even going back to Harrison for GPPs, because I think the plan was to play in minutes, but he just couldn't stay off the court because of fouls. And I don't know if you get in a better situation with Russ here. What are your thoughts here on Green? And then what kind of some of the things I mentioned with the Memphis backcourt?
Well, I'm not going to play the backcourt for sure, but I am interested in the big men. Actually, Jarrell Martin and Jermichael Green, I think, are both interesting plays. I wrote them up for Sunday's slate when they did play against OKC last time. So I guess, you know, I am interested here because in this very same matchup, I did write them up. They're both playing significant minutes right now and both producing on these price points. And so I think they're very cheap, really good ways to escape, you know, typically a pretty thin position, good ways to get pretty good value elsewhere. Now, granted, on a huge slate like this, you might get more pure punts, you know, the excellent plays that just pop up at 4,000 or less that are going to play 35 minutes. Who knows what's yet to come. But if either of them wind up in our cash game lineups, I wouldn't be bummed about it. The only note on Green right now is he is dealing with an illness, a bellyache, as it were. And if that means he's going to potentially miss time or play less time or be less effective, that might make him a little too risky for your cash game needs.
Lakers go in and play the Pelicans. Pelicans did switch up their starting lineup last time against Detroit, where they moved Mirotić out of the power forward position, slotted Anthony Davis over to the four, and then started Emeka Okafor. Now, I don't know if that was a plan just to deal with the Detroit bigs, like specifically Drummond, and if they were to probably go back. I mean, Okafor barely played. Like, he played 15 to 20 minutes or something like that. And then Mirotić came in, was awesome, played only played 32 minutes. I say only because he had been playing more than that. But
Okafor played 13 minutes.
Yeah, 13 minutes. And then, now, do you think two things? One, let's say we don't have word. Would we feel comfortable with Mirotić here coming off the bench still? Or if we heard that he was just start, you have more of a chance to start him here tonight against the Lakers than you maybe did against Detroit. And then, so we'll touch on him, and then we'll touch on whether, you know, in terms of big money payoffs tonight, if Anthony Davis is the way we want to go.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so I think Mirotić is an interesting case here. You know, we've seen him inhabit this role on a number of teams now, or at least two teams. And when the minutes come and go this dramatically, $7,500 is a pretty steep price to pay. I think if we knew that he was going to play 28 minutes, we wouldn't be very bullish on him at a $7,500 price tag. But how much of that was, you know, just kind of catching a breather in a weird game script sort of game for him, where he's a pretty tough defensive matchup for either, or rather, Blake and Drummond both present a non-starter level of defensive matchup for him. Like, he can't really cover either of those guys. So it makes sense that they kind of drifted away from him and got Okafor a little bit more involved and seemed to take right out of his pocket in terms of minutes. He does seem to have high usage with this team. He's really crashing the boards. We've seen all of, you know, him produce on that level in the past. So, you know, this is a very roundabout way of saying it feels a little bit unsure to me at $7,500. I think he's definitely a huge upside guy, obviously, but I'll probably start by looking elsewhere for big tournaments. Still like Davis here, you know, at this point now, played him in that Philly game where he scored 27 fantasy points. I wasn't able to play on the 10th because my family was sick. 91 fantasy points for him against Brooklyn. Comes out with a solid performance against Detroit. I still think he's just a good value, though, so I do like him. And then I guess Drew Holiday is the other guy you could consider from this game. Also excellent against Detroit. Also completely screwed us against Philly, so take that for what it's worth.
I think, well, right now, if you run lineups on our site, Holiday is coming into all of them on at 7,900. I think if we had news that Mirotić was back in the starting lineup, and I really do think he will be, then I think that is probably the way to go. In terms of, I think we could comfortably give him something like 35 minutes. The Lakers, man, it's funny. It seems like every single person from that Cleveland trade benefited. Like, if you were involved in the Cleveland trade, whether going to the Cavs or going away from the Cavs, you sort of like your new landing spot. Like, Jay Crowder's been coming off the bench and playing really, really well for the Jazz. We've obviously seen what Cleveland can do. And then Isaiah Thomas, in his first game back, after stating emphatically, or his agent stating emphatically, that he would not come off the bench, that he would be a starter, he came off the bench, but still played 31 minutes, shot 7 for 12 from the field, and went 22 points, 6 assists, and a rebound. Oh, man, what do we do with Thomas? I mean, the game wasn't a blowout. They seemed like they wanted to play him. He's a dynamic scorer. He never really kind of got rolling in Cleveland. I feel like there's a lot to like about this Lakers team. There's Thomas. We had Kuzma play a ton off the bench. Julius Randle played a ton at center, and he's a dynamic fantasy guy. This matchup right here has the highest over-under of the slate, and it's only eclipsed by the Golden State game. What do you think about the Lakers here in terms of cash game viability?
Yeah, I guess I'm slowing down a little bit on Thomas. You know, $6,700 price tag, scoring 29 points against or 29 fantasy points against Dallas, leaves me a little bit lukewarm. Like, I think that sounds like I would be in the speculation business and trying to figure out, is tonight the night where that jumps up to 35 and the production follows? So I don't really think I want to be on that. Personally, I think I do like Julius Randle here. The minutes do seem secure for him. I think they want to play him at that big spot. I think in a game with Anthony Davis, they'll appreciate his kind of defensive presence. Like, he seems like a much better fit for this game to get bigger minutes than, say, like Brooke Lopez and Lopez's minutes. Not that they directly compete with one another, but, you know, we have seen Lopez occasionally peak up into those 30-minute numbers and, you know, a corresponding dip from Randle. So I do like Randle here. I'm not going to play Kuzma in spite of the big performances in the last two games, at least for cash. Potentially there's big game upside. You know, if they elect that, you know, they just want to go with their kind of athletic front court with Kuzma and Randle, maybe you see some increased production. But I don't know. I mean, it's a really, really good matchup with New Orleans. I think there's a lot of solid value. Ingram's another guy I'd be happy to play here. Nothing looks like, you know, I need this guy in my lineup or I can't play tonight or something.
Losing Larry Nance Jr. also just opened up those minutes. Like, it was their first game without him. It wasn't the first game without him after the trade. It wasn't like he played a ton, but if you, you know, reapportion his 17 to 20 minutes, those are really only going to Kuzma and Randle, I think. Like, it's not really, so I think that, you know, comfortably setting specifically Randle, comfortably setting him in the low 30s, I think we can feel pretty good about it. And even at 7,000, that price tag. That price tag doesn't feel like I'm completely overpaying for him. Sacramento goes in and plays Houston. Houston, huge favorites here, -14.5. They are coming on the back-to-back. I suspect, there's some candidates to rest here, possibly just because this line is so high. Let's say no one did rest, though, and they were full. They were all full goes. Would we want to set their minutes level at sort of blowout risk level, like Harden at maybe 35 minutes instead of 38? Paul, maybe at 30 instead of 32, like we had him last night. What do we want to do when we see lines this high?
Yeah, it sounds right to me. We know that Houston is willing to rest guys when games get out of hand. We know that Sacramento is more than willing to just get the doors blown off their gym just by just being completely horrendous. And it's kind of a strange spot, too, because Sacramento, terrible, terrible defensive team, but also they play pretty darn slow, bottom four pace team in the league. So not to say there's not huge amounts of upside here, but when you just have your pick, like you can pick any of the big money payoff guys tonight, I'm pretty unlikely to settle on a guy with so much minutes uncertainty.
Clippers go in and play Boston. Clippers play the Celtics. Celtics slight favorites. They've kind of been stumbling of late as they've really struggled to score more than anything else. The defense has still been there, but the scoring is sort of maybe catching up with them, that they don't, outside of Kyrie, don't really have much in the way of just dynamic scoring threats. But they are 4.5 favorites. Clippers, they've been incentivized to just play the guys that they brought over in the trade, well, specifically Tobias and Gallinari together. DeAndre's been playing a lot of minutes. Avery Bradley's the one guy that his minutes kind of get cut into by Lou Williams. But although Lou Williams seems like his minutes are getting cut into by the fact that Avery Bradley's there, I want to set all these guys like somewhere in the 36 minute range and feel somewhat comfortable with it. And I'm not sure this is just the best matchup to do it against Boston.
Yeah, Boston's a terrible matchup. Like just from top to bottom, they're tough against almost every position on a defense versus position basis. They're another team that plays pretty slow, bottom eight pace team in the league, and one of, if not the best defensive team in the league this season. So I don't see any reason to target guys going against them unless there's just some huge opportunity that opens up against them. You know, we have played guys occasionally in spots like that in the past, but that's not tonight.
Clippers strike me now, or they're getting to the point of where like someone else just needs to be injured. I hate saying that because I'm not rooting for that, but we're at the point with a lot of their prices and their opportunity where someone would need to go down, or we could just give usage bumps to the guys across the board, because otherwise there are just a lot of guys that want to get their shots up there now between Tobias, Gallinari, Lou Williams. Even Austin Rivers has been known to take a bad shot or two. So all those guys are in bad spots. And then DeAndre, just not a good matchup for him. He needs to be in a high pace matchup to be able to keep up sort of with the volume rebounds more than anything else. And this just isn't it. Phoenix goes in and plays Utah. No line on this game right now. And I suspect it's because we are waiting on Ricky Rubio news. Ricky Rubio, good for him for setting a line if this is the case. But, oh no, probably Devin Booker as well. I'm not so concerned here with the Phoenix side of the ball really at all, just because it's Utah. Phoenix already needs sort of dream matchups and people injured to be able to consider them. So I think Phoenix is probably just a scratch. Maybe you want to take some upside play on like a guy like TJ Warren, only if Booker doesn't play. And Utah, you know, they started Royce O'Neal over Rubio the other day. They've been playing very, very well. I suspect we do not have Rubio news ahead of lock because this game is so late. Is there anything we can do with the Utah team, like a guy like Donovan Mitchell? Like, is he Rubio dependent on you? The only reason I say this is because Phoenix, obviously, it feels terrible to get out of a DFS matchup where Phoenix is on the slate and not play any of the guys against them. And I'm just not sure we're going to get a chance to do it because of some of what we're waiting here for in terms of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, so I think for me, I'm probably not going to run out Rolls Royce O'Neal. I get that he had a big game against Portland, was serviceable against Charlotte, but the fact that he has that Dante Cunningham all-star level of 38 minutes, 10 fantasy points is just, man, yikes. That's pretty troublesome because it means two things.
And he's a total zero if Rubio doesn't play.
You don't want to be there because it's not like, you know, we've talked about good punts and bad punts in the past, and really good punts, like you can punt to a guy like O'Neal when the situation is such that, say, he normally played 24 minutes and scored like an average of 18 fantasy points, right? You're like, okay, well, if that happens and I'm on a $4,300 price tag, I'm not skunked. And we know that when Rubio's out, like it used to be this way with Taj Gibson, say, on the Bulls. We know that if he's out, then O'Neal's going to go out there and play 36 minutes and score like 45 fantasy points, right? Like that's the kind of risk you're happy to take at that price point. But knowing that sometimes he misses here and you might just not even get it, that seems to be a little bit speculative for me. As for guys like Donovan Mitchell, I don't know. I mean, it's such a good matchup. And Mitchell, I think, is like roughly fairly priced that if you can get him in the best possible matchup for guys at his position, I think you're talking, you know, like other guys, Joe Ingles, Jackson, even like, you know, there's, or I'm sorry, Jackson's going the other way, but he's a value showing up too, right? If the minutes come in. But some of these guys, I think, are still playable, even if the Rubio question mark is still hanging out there. Favors have been paying this price routinely. The minutes have been sort of up and down. I think even Gobert, you know, another guy who, you know, probably around fairly priced, but we've seen him do it on this price point too. So when you have a matchup this good on a big slate, yeah, I know the Rubio thing is unsure, but I think I feel better about the Utah guys maybe than you do.
The people are going to look at Joe Ingles game log and see 37, 40, 37, a 17 game and a 37 game. And if you can get really excited about that, he's been running really, really hot from the field. So I would caution people to get too excited about
him. He's been excited about him.
He's been really good. And my only concern with Favors is that Crowder seems to have cut into his minutes just a little bit. But it all still kind of doesn't matter all that much because this matchup is so great that you can consider just about any Utah guy at their price points, as long as we had some of that Rubio news. The final game on the slate here, Golden State goes in and plays Portland. Relatively close line here with Golden State 5.5-point favorites, which for them is considered a close line. And it's important for them because that's where we want to start setting their minutes at, not going to blow the team out. The other night, Steve Kerr, some people took disrespect to this. I thought it was pretty funny. He just didn't coach the game. He just let the players coach the game when they played Phoenix and beat them by 50. Like all the timeouts, Draymond Green was, you know, drawing up the plays. They were doing stuff like that. And Phoenix kind of took umbrage and then also recognized that they also lost by 50.
Guess what? Don't lose on purpose if that's your thing. You know, like don't go out there and lose on purpose to try to get high draft picks if you're going to then complain and feel embarrassed when teams wipe the floor with you. That's
And they just have Draymond coach against you. But with this is another one of those ones along with the Lakers and the Pelicans that has a really, really high total. Where do we stand? I mean, I like playing guys like Curry and Durant in games where I think they're going to play 37 to 38 minutes. This feels like the night where they're candidates to do it. Do we see these guys as firm cash game plays?
Well, I don't know that I see it as firm as you do potentially. I think it's fine. I think if you wind up paying up for those guys, you're probably doing okay. The issue I have with Curry in particular is basically he's not paid these prices, you know, $9,600 since January 27th, right? And that's quite a long time from now. You're basically saying this will be the game where he goes out there and plays 36, 37 minutes. Now, Vegas seems to suggest that that's more likely than not, but that's really the peak. So you're going to say that, yeah, this will be like the three games basically since he's returned from injury, four games where he's played 36 and not like the 12 games where he's played fewer minutes than that. Because he really does kind of need all those minutes to get there on this price, just given how many different mouths they have to feed out there in Golden State. So yeah, playable for sure. I think I'm a little bit less like just lock him and load him. Let's run him out in every format than you are maybe. I'm not directly quoting you or anything, but that's kind of the impression I got. Nonetheless, this is the type of game you want to play him in. The risk for the Golden State guys always is that the game gets out of hand. You know, things get a little bit dicey and then they wind up scoring, you know, three quarters of their season long averages. And then you get left holding the bag. So not as super excited about Curry. I like Durant probably a little bit more, but there's also competition at that position too. So,
Well, along those lines, the reason Curry shows up a lot for us is because there's no competition at point guard. That's actually really more the issue is here is that like you look at this point guard list, if we're going through the points per dollar point guard list as our site stands right now, and by the way, this is subject to change, obviously, but the minutes are relatively close. You have Tyler Johnson. We already talked about the risk there. Then you have Curry. Then you have Lowry. So we were pretty unexcited about that. Elfrid Payton. They have Tyler Ulis coming back, and they're playing Utah. Kemba. We talked about the insecurity there. Corey Joseph. No thanks. Joe Young off the bench. Austin Rivers. No thanks. And then the list unbelievably gets worse from there. So like so what you're staring at with Curry is not so much that you love him, is that you kind of maybe just hate all the other guys and
hate. Whoa, a little strong.
But, okay. Hate, just firmly hate all of them. And you're in a situation where all the other guys that we mentioned for, as plays tonight are just coming at all the other positions. So I think that's really the case with Curry more than anything else. On and it might not end up with him in all the lineups, and we could just be staring at 100% Steph, and I wouldn't totally hate it. Even though
I think I like Lillard better going the other way. Lillard, really? I think, is such a more reliable minutes track record. I mean, just look at the guy. Yeah, sometimes games get out of hand, but like 38 to 41 minutes, not out of the question for him. You can find many games up and down his game log where he pays his price, and occasionally then some. And yeah, like, you don't have to do as much squinting and, you know, scrolling to get to games that you feel happy with this price point. Golden State, obviously, like a somewhat tough matchup defensively, but also playing the second fastest pace in the league. So some of that comes out in the wash. I think I like Lillard better than Steph tonight.
Interesting. On the Portland side of the ball, the juice of Nurkic is questionable. Oh, real quick. Sorry, I should have mentioned this before. Golden State does have a couple injury things. Draymond is questionable with a finger. I'm not sure if they're going to hold him out. Omri Caspi did get the start last game. So that, keep an eye out for that. They'd be able to start Caspi again, I think, because you're not too crazy worried about size issues against Portland. I don't know if we'll have that answer ahead of time. My guess is that Draymond plays, but who knows? And then Nurkic, I'm not sure we're going to have this news. And this one's probably important too, because I suspect they would start Ed Davis, and Ed Davis is very cheap. He played 29 minutes off the bench when Nurkic got hurt the other day. Ed Davis is only, sorry, I'm looking up, is only 3,800 on FanDuel. We can probably end on this note because he already mentioned the Lillard thing, but would Davis be the guy that you could feel okay about at 3,800, even if you didn't know if Nurkic was going to play, because he's a guy that already does play somewhere around 20 minutes a game and is decent fantasy wise. That makes sense. The question is, this, like, we've mentioned.
Yeah, this is like the exact same correlation I was talking about earlier. Sure. Yeah. I think Davis is a reasonable play here. If the downside I'm going to get on him is 20 minutes and likely 18, 19 fantasy points. Sure. That sounds like there's a lot of upside baked in here.
Yep. So I think we could see him as a very popular cash game play tonight, just because I think most people are going to be, if you're in tune with this, then you're going to be okay with the risk. Okay. We're going to get out of here. Huge Wednesday in the NBA, 12 games, as many as you really ever see on an NBA slate. dfsr.com/fantasy will get you a free 3-day trial. So go check that out. And if you sign up today, we'll extend that free three-day trial through the beginning of after the All-Star break. So don't worry about it. There's only, you know, two slates worth of games, and then it's a 7-day break. So if you go sign up today, don't sweat it. We'll extend the free 3-day trial. You just let us know and we'll work it out after the All-Star break. dfsr.com/fantasy. Buddy, enjoy your Wednesday. Won't talk to you again until after the All-Star break, because we don't never, ever, ever talk except for the podcast. Enjoy your Wednesday of basketball.
Peace.